Hi, this is Brian Lehrer. You're listening to WNYC On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed Hosting Services, providing application management, hosting, professional services, security services, and compliance solutions for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
Well, it is Wednesday, hump day if you actually have a job in the 9-to-5 world. We are in the middle of another hair-raising roller coaster ride of a week in the economy, and we draw your attention to a cartoon we've posted on our webpage about the bailout plan. Homes are on fire all over town, but the firefighters are only aiming their hoses at the town bank. See it at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. In that spirit, American Express, have you heard, is the latest company to announce it is becoming a bank. Why? You guessed it. So it can get in line for bailout money, $3.5 billion worth, according to the Wall Street Journal this morning. Membership has its privileges. And you know about the auto industry and AIG going back for a third bite of the apple this week. At the same time, the Bush administration is reducing the amount of help it's offering for homeowners facing foreclosure, limiting it to those with conventional loans from Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, not the subprime loans at the heart of the crisis. Freddie and Fannie overseer James Lockhart.
I'm asking today that the private label mortgage-backed securities servicers and investors rapidly adopt this program as the industry standard. Not only will this streamlined approach assist borrowers, but broad acceptance and effective implementation will stabilize communities and property values.
So everyone should do it this way, says Lockhart. Again, we refer you to the Banks Only cartoon at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Meanwhile, Circuit City filed for bankruptcy this week. DHL is stopping domestic deliveries in the United States and laying off like 10,000 people. Starbucks profits are down 97%. The Times reports that even lawyers are hurting. You see that today when they are usually recession-proof. And the MTA, as we discussed yesterday, says the coming service cuts could be draconian, their word. And it's only Wednesday. During our show this morning, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson will hold a news conference, an update on the bailout money, and we will give you some of that. And Governor Patterson will hold one to announce his proposed cuts for the state fiscal crisis. He is livid that the legislature ignored his Friday deadline for suggesting their own ideas.
We haven't gotten it yet. That we're just going to continue to try to refinance our way out of this crisis and make the crisis worse. And if you want to see how bad things can get, look what happened to the state of California. We don't want to be the next California.
So later on, we'll carry parts of the Patterson and Paulson announcements. But we start with two views of the current moment from Katrina VandenHeuvel from The Nation and Douglas Holtz Aiken, who was John McCain's economics advisor in the campaign, but is now being mentioned as a possible member of the Obama administration. Katrina VandenHeuvel first, editor and publisher of The Nation magazine. Hi, Katrina. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian.
You're calling on President-elect Obama to really shoot for a transformational, progressive presidency, not just incremental change. Does the financial crisis give him more of an opportunity to do that, or does it tie his hands?
It gives him more of an opportunity if he will seize the mandate that this election has given him. This was a contest over different political economic philosophies, and I would argue that this election rejected the philosophy of market fundamentalism, that the government has no role in our economy, that the markets can do no wrong. We are seeing the reverse, Brian, and I think it gives him a great opportunity to do a new deal. At the core heart of the new deal was relief, reform, and reconstruction. And if he can build on that to show that an activist government can improve the conditions of people's lives, he will be a successful president. Reject the view that he, in doing so, would, quote, overreach. These are times for bold actions.
Is he off to a good start, in your opinion? I realize it's only been a few days, but his first agenda for the transition seems to be a bailout for the auto industry, not an obvious progressive agenda item, but one that he and the Democrats in Congress are embracing and President Bush is not.
I think his first first item on the agenda is to save jobs and create jobs. We have reached, you've reported this, Brian, its highest jobless rate in this country in 14 years. We are witnessing the use of government on behalf of the most privileged, the banks. We might as well, the nation, WNYC, declare ourselves banks today, Brian, and get a piece of this. The pigs are out the trough. But
not a bad idea. We could be a not-for-profit bank.
But the bailout of the auto industry can also link to another great agenda item of Barack Obama's, which is a green energy agenda, which is to restore energy independence to this country by renewing great investment in alternative energies while you create jobs. There's a program your listeners should know about called the Apollo Alliance. With the right level of investment, public works, creation of millions of jobs, leading to energy independence. And I think that needs to be part of an auto bailout so that there are demands on the auto company, which would also benefit them. But you need wage creation, too, because who's going to buy these cars? So there's a whole slew of things I think Barack Obama could do if he respects activist government.
When you frame it in terms of labor, the Democrats in Congress and the president-elect seem to see a Detroit bailout as about jobs and about the fate of retirees also, so they don't lose their pensions and health care. But is there a progressive paradox here? Because GM says its problems are mostly about health and pension costs. The union deals they're locked into cost so much more than what Toyota and other foreign automakers pay. Did those jobs become too good to be sustainable?
No. I think what's gone on in this country over the last 30, 40 years with the conservative ideology, neoliberal ideology that has dominated, is we've seen a fraying of the social contract, a social contract that needs to be renewed. And when we talk about Barack Obama's first 100 days, of course, there's the economic agenda, creating jobs, keeping people in their homes, but there's also health care. And health care, not necessarily connected to your job. That is why we need to create a universal health care system in this country. The auto companies have been unionized. The other big fight in this administration moving forward with a new Congress, a Democratic majority, is to rebuild a labor movement and level the playing field in a country that has seen such corporate domination. The Employee Free Choice Act will be up in the first 100 days, and that is a battle to restore fairness to America and rebuild the American dream. So they're all kind of linked together. Those who say healthcare is a separate agenda item, Brian, always confuse me because it seems to me if you want to be part of a secure country, true human security comes from having healthcare.
Do you see a change on the part of corporate America in terms of supporting some kind of, if not single payer, which might be what you ultimately support, some kind of more major role for the government in health care? If these are such burdens for GM and so many other companies, I spoke to the NFIB during the campaign, the lobby for small business, which was very skeptical of McCain's plan, which was a surprise because it didn't do enough. But is this really a change? Because, you know, out of the other side of their mouth, they say they don't want the government on their backs with respect to the health care system, like Obama's call for play or pay.
I think in the enlightened business community, including Rick Wagner, one of the auto industry's leaders, has been for a healthcare system that would make American business competitive in the world because we are an outlier in the Western industrialized countries. We have a healthcare system that isn't working, that is fabulously expensive, and that is a bad combination for any pragmatist, and that's a word we're going to hear a lot about. I mean, I think we should put aside labels and work towards solutions. And a solution includes what I said earlier, which is using an activist government for relief, reform, and reconstruction and building these elements into a country. And that is, you know, that is the fight underway. But the way this bailout is working, Brian, every day news of the corruption, the lobbying, the favoritism. What concerns me is that there is great anger in this country as well. And I think unless we see some rebuilding of our economic infrastructure, that could be very scary.
That's a great point to bring up. And my guest is Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor and publisher of The Nation. We'll talk next to the McCain campaign's economics advisor, Douglas Holtz-Aiken. But I've been wondering, where is the outrage? Is it just not being reported? Is it tamp down because everybody is so scared. But I know so many Americans look at these repeated bailouts for AIG, and maybe it's necessary, but they're up to $150 billion now for one company, and the auto industry coming in, and banks that are not in trouble, investment firms turning themselves into banks that qualify, and all of this stuff. Where is the outrage?
We're not at a tipping point moment yet, I think, Brian. I think part of it is that people have been so caught up in the election, which is a week, we're a week out from this election, which for millions of people. It was all poured into that, and there was a sense of great hope and engagement and excitement, and the Obama moment is one that people are still celebrating. I think reality is going to set in very quickly. As you saw last week, Barack Obama standing on that stage with his advisors. I hope he will also have a summit with people involved in the, quote, real economy, and I think he has the leadership skills, if he also implements the policies, to navigate this country through this terribly difficult period and not bring out the fear and the anger, which I fear we saw in the Palinization of our politics at these rallies.
You were skeptical of the Paulson bailout bill from the start, and we will take part of his news conference coming up later this hour. What do you think of the way it's being administered?
Miserably. And I think finally, in the after the original foray into this bailout, Paulson learns from Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of Britain, and you put equity infusion into banks. But unlike in Britain, there were no demands on the banks. We're talking today about an auto bailout. There should be demands on there. But look at what the banks are doing. They're sitting on the money. The basic primary rule is that they should be lending. There should be liquidity in a system. And so I think there needs to be a revisiting of this bailout, a reopening of it, and that the Obama administration should make that priority number one.
And apparently, President-elect Obama and the Democratic Congress do want to put some strings on any auto industry bailout so that it would come with some kind of green agenda in particular, as well as some promises for labor. Although on the other side of that, a green agenda might not be in the interest of short-term profitability.
Well, a green agenda is the future of our country, Brian. I think that, I talk about the New Deal. At the heart of the New Deal, you had between March 1933 and June 1933, the inauguration was later than a frenzy of legislative activity, 16 pieces of legislation, some of those committed to a public works infrastructure. And I think the greening of our country is the future of jobs. It's also, I think, going to be a great job generator. But in the interim, we need to reopen the bailout we've been talking about because it really, one, the heart of it, the true scandal, is it doesn't even care for the people. It doesn't try to keep people in their homes. You spoke about Sheila Bair of the FDIC. At least she's trying to address the key issue, keep people in your homes, because the metastasizing evictions roil through communities. And that's, again, the radical inequity of this system.
So talk about Sheila Bair. She's in the news as head of the FDIC, complaining that the Bush administration's bailout for homeowners facing foreclosure is too limited. What do you think they should be doing?
I think they should be restructuring mortgages. There should be a moratorium on foreclosures. I mean, I read a statistic that there are 10,000 foreclosures a day. Brian, you're reading about people living in parking lots. I mean, I think I'm not an economist, but there are those who are working closely with Congress who know what to do if you have a people-centered program. They began with the banks. And yes, there is a link between Wall Street and Main Street, but they have so favored the financial community that they've lost sight of the use of government on behalf of the people.
Before you go, and we get another view from Douglas Holtz-Aiken on another matter entirely for you. You called us off the air yesterday after hearing something that a guest said about President-elect Obama and missile defense. John Bennett from the Defense News, newspaper covering the military, was talking about Obama's position in favor of a Star Wars-type missile defense if it's proven to work. And Russia, as we all know, is very upset about the Bush plan to deploy such missiles to Poland and threatening to put arms on the border. Obama has to decide now whether to go through with it. And on that point, and referring to Poland, John Bennett said this.
The Polish Prime Minister made some comments over the weekend that seems to indicate that Senator Obama has attempted to reassure him that after the Russian comments and actions last week, that he is prepared to move forward with the plans. So I think that's an indication. The Polish Prime Minister he would not make a comment like that unless he had had the go ahead from the president-elect. So you have to wonder what Russia is up to. Are they trying to force us into doing this, to escalate for national pride reasons, to say, here come the big bad Americans.
Obama doesn't decide to deploy a weapon system that he doesn't believe in just to prove America's manhood. And then we said goodbye to John Bennett from the military, from the Defense News, which covers the military. And Katrina VandenHeuvel, why did that lead you to give us a call?
Well, I think that the Cold War has ended in Moscow, but not in Washington. And I think, Brian, what you said is so true. First of all, the missile defense program has never been proven to work. Joseph Cerenzoni, an expert on this, has said this is one of the great frauds and scams of our time. This country has wasted $150 billion over 25 years. More important, however, the citizens of the Czech Republic and Poland don't want this system. Secondly, the key, the radical underpinning here is the rollback of the treaties to reduce nuclear weapons under the Bush administration, the ABM, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, an underpinning, part of a bipartisan web of nuclear agreements was rolled back. We need to restore that. And Barack Obama has the ability. His first instinct after the Russian-Georgian conflict, which the New York Times reported was started by Russia, that needs to be chronologically established, was diplomatic. He was pushed in the vortex of the campaign by John McCain and some of Barack Obama's advisors to be more militaristic. But Barack Obama understands the role Russia could play in reducing the nuclear dangers of this world, reducing nuclear proliferation, rebuilding a series of agreements. You need Russia to deal with Iran, combat terrorism, not escalate in Afghanistan. And finally, Barack Obama, like Henry Kissinger, George Shultz, Bill Perry, has spoken to the building of a nuclear-free world, the abolition of nuclear weapons. So I think all of his instincts are good, and let us hope people who say he needs to test his manhood in terms of foreign policy understand there's a larger manhood, sisterhood, that needs peace, sanity, and justice, and smart diplomacy.
And we'll get a longer take on Obama and the Middle East and the Muslim world and the small violent jihad sliver of the Muslim world coming up later in the show from Fawaz Jurjes, Sarah Lawrence Middle East Studies professor. But just to zero in for one final thing, what do you make of the Obama position that exchange with John Bennett was based on? The Obama position on his campaign website throughout the campaign is that missile defense, if it's proven to work, is something that he would support. Is that just a way of not taking a position or setting up an excuse for saying no because he'll take your position and say it's not been proven to work? Is he trying to tell us anything that has meaning there?
You know, Brian, I think for too long, too many Democrats have been cowed into a position where it's about sort of technocracy. If it doesn't work, then we're against it. We need to take a more serious position, which is that anti-ballistic missile systems are not part of the future security of this world. It's not part of the challenges we need to face in the 21st century. I would rather focus on holding Barack Obama's feet to the fire and accountable to the talks he's given about real nuclear nonproliferation and rebuilding this series of treaties.
All right. Katrina VandenHeuvel, editor and publisher of The Nation. You can read her stuff at thenation.com. Oh, by the way, I don't know if this is meant to compete with The Nation, but they're handing out on the streets of New York today copies of a fake New York Times. It looks like the real New York Times. They've taken the actual logo. I don't know if they're going to get sued for that or what, but its date is Saturday, July 4th, 2009. And this is kind of a progressive wish list New York Times. The big headline, Iraq War Ends. Other front-page headline, Nation Sets Its Sights on Building Sane Economy. Another one, Maximum Wage Law Succeeds. Treasury Announces True Cost Tax Plan. Ex-Secretary Apologizes for WMD Scare. Did you see this?
I saw this, and I think this is the newspaper we should just keep holding and read as we move to July 4th, 2009, because this, by the way, Brian, I don't think this is, I think you said progressive. I think this is the majority position in the country today, Iraq war ends. That's what this election was about.
Katrina
Vandenhoevel.
Thank
you
very
much. I love it.
And nation.org,
thenation.com.
And we've put a link also to this fake New York Times on our webpage in case you're interested. And we have a question for you. Tell us what you think about how Henry Paulson is doing at administering the bailout money. Tell us what you think at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Another view in a minute from the McCain campaign's chief economics advisor, Douglas Holtzakin, who at least some people think could actually be tapped for a job with the Obama administration. Stay with us. Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out our other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This free service is made possible by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.